I'm Heather Kaplan, and you're listening to the Lane 9 Project Podcast. A quick disclaimer before I dive into this conversation with Stephanie Flippin. Stephanie and I are both coaches and practitioners, but we're not your practitioners. The content of this episode is intended for conversation and awareness, and it's not intended to, nor should it replace, individual healthcare, coaching, or therapy. Talk to your providers and/or your team before you make any changes. All right, that being said, hi, Steph. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Heather. Thank you so much for having me. I know you and I have been able to spend some time together in person, but I was so excited when I saw that you and Alexis relaunched Lane 9. So I'm really grateful to be here.
Yes, she's super bummed that she's not here. So we may have like unofficially signed you up for part two. We'll see.
Okay. No, I'm in.
Sometime over the summer. She's like, can we record again? I want to come.
Yeah.
So yeah, her schedule right now is very inflexible, but hopefully that will change in a couple weeks. But yeah, anyways, we did get to meet briefly in person when I was out in Colorado. What year was that? Like, I have no idea.
Was that 2022? I think so.
I don't know.
Because it wasn't last year. Yeah.
No, it wasn't last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, and you're part of the Lift, Run, Perform team of running coaches.
Yeah.
And you're also a professional athlete and a podiatrist. Is that the right term? Okay. So there are a lot of titles that we could dive into here, but I would love to hear you share a little bit more about your running story. So I've heard you talk about kind of different aspects of how you got into running. And I find it really fascinating that it started with dance and ballet and then sports and then stress relief. Just like running was a fun little hobby that kept you sane for a little while. And now here you are.
Yeah. You know, I think I've spoken about this quite often, but I feel like running has always been a part of my life. I remember being like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years old and watching my dad pack his gym bag every day for work. But it wasn't like just a gym bag. It was like his running bag. Like he was always going to go for a run on his lunch break. And I couldn't wait for him to come home to like tell me how his run was. I remember being like really nerdy about that. And I remember sometimes he was like, you know, because I grew up in San Diego, but my dad worked in like further inland. So definitely not like a coastal region. So it was pretty warm, honestly. And I remember him being like, Steph, it felt like a hairdryer out there today. And I just like wanted to hear all the details about it. So yeah, like I said, running has always sort of been a part of my life. I really got into it because of my dad. But ironically, I focused on other sports and running was just more of something that was for fun and more of like enjoyable movement that was never really structured. And I feel like I spent some time over the years maybe regretting that and being like, ugh, like I wish I had, you know, ran cross country and track in high school and then had like a collegiate, you know, trajectory in it. But now that I'm on the brink of turning 35 and like a few years into running at a professional level, I think a part of me has come to realize that everything's meant to be. It's probably for the best that I didn't get so serious about it and like, you know, single specializing so early on. I know, Heather, you're probably like just acutely aware too of the risks of doing that in youth. Especially like its impacts on bone density too, because instead I was really focused on like high level ballet. I played soccer for a bit. So yeah, that's sort of what brought me into the sport. And like you mentioned, I did start to get a little bit more serious about it when I was in medical school. And yeah, I think things just sort of took off from there. But I don't know, the trajectory was fairly gradual, honestly. Like I kept things very fun and not structured and not stressful for a long time.
When did it feel like you knew this was something you wanted to pursue a little bit more? Like going from running a couple of shorter distance races to like, maybe I could do something a little bit longer, maybe 100 miles.
Yeah, I know. It's like such a slippery slope. Of course, like I entered the sport in like that classic way. I feel like that every like runner does, right? Like someone mentions like the Hal Higdon, like training plan to you. I pulled that up. I ordered his book, which probably has like 20 new editions since then. Because like I mentioned, I'm turning 35, but I of course didn't just run a 5K, right? It was like, let's take on this half marathon. And then I was in school in Chicago. So I ended up running the Chicago Marathon like 4 years in a row. This was before there was even lottery or like qualifiers or anything. You could just sign up.
Weird.
I know. It's been a while, but I think what really flipped the switch for me was the fact that I never really struggled to complete. It wasn't an issue with like the distances. I wasn't doing any type of speed work whatsoever. So I hadn't really like reached my potential in that way. But I mean, I was really durable. Like I was able to complete like a road marathon, like a trail 50K, a trail 50 miler, which really shocked me. And yeah, I guess it just wasn't really a mental or physical struggle for me to get to the finish line. Again, like I'll underscore, I wasn't putting up like world-class times, but I think once I ran my first 100 miler, I was only 24 years old. And for me as a coach, that's quite young to be entering into 100 milers. I actually don't recommend that for my athletes who are maybe in their early to mid 20s, but I mean, it was extremely hard. I'm not going to lie, but I think it was more hard emotionally just because I wasn't like very mature yet. And I hadn't really experienced that type of physical and like mental anguish for that long. But I think once I got myself to the finish line at that race, I was like, okay, this isn't quite normal. Like not everyone can do this. And I mean that in, honestly, the most humble way, but I think just something there was like, you know what could I do if I actually like intentionally trained for this? I think that's when at that point in time, I was like, huh, perhaps I do have a future in this, but I'll be totally clear. That was 2015. And I was not by any means thinking that this could be like a actual career path for me that could help pay my bills. I was just thinking like, oh yeah, like I can get better at this. And I didn't know exactly what that meant at the time.
Yeah. Well, okay. So with a background in ballet and soccer, you have some like endurance in you, right? Like not necessarily aerobic endurance. I'm thinking more mental and just like the discipline of like hours and hours of practicing a craft, right?
Yeah.
But I'm still like the 100 miler to me feels like I understand the world of ultras. And then I kind of put 100 milers over here.
Yeah,
like
right.
There's like the 50Ks, 100Ks. And I'm like, wait, you 100 miles? What?
Yeah.
So what, if you can remember, what part of you was just like, 100 miles, let's give that a try.
Yeah. Again, I'll be totally candid here. It was not my idea to take on 100 miles. It was definitely he was my boyfriend at the time. And then we actually got engaged at our first 100 miler, but now my husband for the last, how long have we been married? 7 years.
Years.
Yeah. It's been a while now, but it was actually his idea. I credit Mitchell a lot to seeing something in me. And he doesn't coach me. He's never coached me or anything like that. But I think he just sort of, he knew that I had something within me that I think maybe it's like grit, like just mental fortitude. And I think for him, it was something that he was very interested in too. And he thought like, hey, you know what, this could be a fun adventure for us to go on. And I remember when he proposed the idea to me about running that first 100 miler, I was like, what? I just checked off this 50 miler. Like, isn't that good enough type deal? I think, again, this was also a really stressful time in our lives. I think we were wrapping up our last year of medical school, about to head into residency. So I was like, gosh, like, do we really need to take this on? But then of course he had, you know, some ulterior motives there where he did, like I mentioned, he did propose to me at the finish line of that race. But yeah, I mean, I swore that these were bucket list things for me, but I think they weren't because I really did enjoy it. And as my time did become more my own, like residency was like a shit show, but it was just so busy, especially like intern year. But as the years went on and I was like, okay, I do have more time to intentionally train. I have more time to actually like set goals and make a plan towards them. Yeah, I think I just noticed that, hey, my body responds really well to this and it's not really that challenging for me to do it.
That's so wild. But I think that's a great example of like, we're not all built for the same things, even within the same sport, you know, like, I mean, obviously we see that at a really high level, but I think it's become so common. Like first it became really common to do marathons. And now I think it's increasingly common for people to enter into the ultra world. And I certainly, as a late 30s person, like know a lot more people who are getting into really long distance running. And there's some aspect of like seeing so many people do it that makes it seem a little bit like, oh yeah, well then I could do that. And I'm like, we can't we can't all do this. This is not a good idea for everybody.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's so true too. And especially like I mentioned with coaching athletes, I'm always really cautionary with like longer distance isn't better. Like, and I right. say that coming from like, I enjoy the 100-mile distance. I enjoy, you know, 50 mile to 100K distances as well, but it really isn't for everyone. Yeah. Like you used a great example too, where we saw that trend with marathons where athletes are just on this marathon sort of hamster wheel, jumping from training cycle to training cycle. And like I said, I'll be the first person to say, and even I'll be the first like athlete to say too, that like for me, perhaps this is maybe a segue into just injury and illness, but I've had to take a step back from the 100-mile distance, and it's just given me that much, much more respect, not just for the distance itself, but for my own body and my mind, and just the perspective and appreciation that there have been times in my life where I've been able to push very, very hard to get the best out of myself in a 100-mile race. And like recently over the last year, I just haven't been in that place to do so. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, looking at your website and the list of races that you've done, I'm like, wait, how many hundreds is that? There's so many of them. Like,
yeah.
But it's also, sure. I mean, to your point, like your first one was in 2015. Mm-hmm. You won the USA Nash, or what's the title of that race? Like the national championship?
The national championship. The USATF national championship. Yeah.
So that was in 2021.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like 6 years is a long time to get familiar with a distance and to progress as an athlete. Like it's not that somebody steps into one and then they win the next one. It's such a process.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think I've had friends and athletes too, who are like, oh, I just like, what's wrong with me? I can't like get this down. And I'm like, honestly, it takes so many tries. I think it took me 8 100 milers to like get it right. And you know, these are not like races where you can just like recover for a week and then turn around and take it. You know, I like did some risky things like over the years where it's like, okay, I was like really pushing it, like, you know, running 300 milers in the span of like 9 to 10 months. And some athletes can do that, like at the professional level. I personally cannot, like in the context of working full time and just the totality of stress that I usually have on my plate. And I just think that, like I said, more isn't always better. I'm so open about the fact that it took me many, many tries to get it right. And also the fact that it takes a stroke of luck too, for everything to come together. We see that like in the road marathon, right? With like weather conditions, just your gut tolerating things, even if you've been practicing it in training, you know?
Yeah.
And it, like I said, it is like threading a needle, but for me, like over the years, that's just given me so much appreciation and perspective for those good days.
Yeah, for sure. What has changed about your approach to injury, like sustainability of your body, like over those from 2015 until now? I guess that's almost 10 years.
Yeah.
What would you go back and tell yourself early on if you were like, okay, you're going to get into this 100 miler thing, like here are some things you might need to know? Or do you feel like you had a good grasp on it from the beginning?
Yeah, I think I actually, like looking back, I do think I had a good grasp on not trying to do too much, especially in those earlier years. I actually started to do too much once like sponsorship and like the professional side of things entered the picture. And I think that that was an element of wanting to prove myself, also like wanting to like represent and like perform, like give my sponsors or like a legitimate confirmation as to why they signed me on, and just like wanting to continue to establish myself in the sport. But contrary to that, I think earlier on, I was pretty conservative and I eased in. I certainly didn't overtrain, though if anything, I did undertrain at some points in time. Yeah. I think we've all been there. But I think if I could go back and like give myself any type of advice or redo anything, it would maybe be to have a better grasp of training principles and to have hired a coach earlier on. I mean, we've seen such a shift in online run coaching, and like back then, you know, it's like social media is so different now too. I don't even think I knew that I thought that hiring a run coach was for someone that was like super fast or like trying to get to the Olympics, not me like slogging through my first 100 miler. I think Grayson Murphy actually shared something recently just about her training. And it's a great training principle to underscore that you don't need constant different training stimuli to get fitter or to see these leaps and bounds like in your athletic journey. You really just need a lot of consistency at the same types of effort. Now, I don't want to blanket that statement. Like, of course, that's probably not going to work for sprinters or someone like really trying to make a huge breakthrough performance if they, you know, have just been doing the same thing over and over and over again and not seeing results. But I think we can, in general, like appreciate the fact that consistency stacked over time really yields the best sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like consistency, but also not like, you know, taking risks is a part of the sport, but what comes with that is potential injury, you know? And I wish in the past, like especially over the past like 5 years or so, that I didn't try to like reach for so much all at once in an effort to like validate myself to others.
I was curious to talk to you about how your work-life balance has changed over the past couple of years. I don't know how much you're working. I mean, I feel like when I met you for that dinner, it was like you were still working full-time.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's still true. I feel like now, especially in the wake of Jess McClain finishing fourth at the Olympic trials, Dakota Lindworm finishing third, like having jobs outside of running. I don't want to call it a day job because like we run during the day. So it's, it's just like multiple day jobs. But yeah, I've been curious for you how you've shifted the approach of now that I do have sponsorship and I could cut back a little bit on work. Is that helpful or is it not helpful because of like what you're used to and what keeps you honest, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. And I do feel like when asking someone that, I think there has to be a strong grasp of your personality and like the environment that you flourish in. I'll be the first to admit that I have a bit of like a workaholic tendency, for better or for worse, right? Like it's sort of what got me to higher level education, right? And many wonderful things in my life, but with the implementation again of like smartphones and just like you have constant, you don't have to, you no longer have to go into a computer room, right? And like do dial up to check your email. I know I'm like dating myself here, but it's hard for me. I'm one of those types of people who like, I want to clear my inbox. I like want to have a quick like response time. And I have felt like in the past, some of my best performances have come from like high pressure situations. And, you know, and sometimes when I have a lot more on my plate, I'm a little bit better at time management out of necessity.
Yeah.
But there's a fine line there, right? It's like some people can perform well in that environment, but I reached a point where like, I just have way too much personal stress going on. Like I look back to say, well, yeah, like 2020, especially 2021 coming out of the pandemic when surgery centers were like reopened, everyone was like wanting to get back in. And I'm specifically referring to when I was working in private practice. I mean, I would be getting up at like 3:45, 4 a.m., like getting in like an 18-mile long run on a Friday, going into work, seeing patients. And not every single day in the office was incredibly long, but then getting back at like 5 p.m., heading out for a second run, you know, this is 100-mile training.
Yeah.
And then coaching through the weekend. And in hindsight, I mean, those are probably adding up, including training, to be 80 to 90 hour weeks of work. And it was 100% unsustainable. I had some really stellar performances in 2021 and then heading into 2022. And I wrote a piece for Outside Inc. about this, but the second I had a death in the family that was a very like traumatic and personal stressor for me, that's when my house, like my proverbial house, just came crashing down. Like that was sort of the last straw of stress. I think for a while I made it work out of necessity. But now like in where I have more flexibility, I am on a long-term sabbatical from like in-person patient care. Yeah. I still do virtual medical consultations and a lot of like consult work. And I'm hopeful to get back into things with volunteer work as well. But I think just removing that aspect of having to drive into the office every single day, and be, you know, on the phone, like fighting with insurance companies, like all those types of things. I can't imagine trying to do what I'm doing now while still having that element in place. That said, I transitioned once I decided to take a long-term sabbatical to full-time coaching. So that has, I mean, that takes up the bulk of my work days for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not the type of person who wants to just be sort of like the bare bones, like online, or I do a lot of in-person coaching too, but I never wanted that to be just like my quote, like coffee money or something like that. Not to throw shade at anyone who coaches for that reason, but it truly is like a full-time job for me. And I do like to dedicate the time and energy as such.
Now you're coaching full-time, not working in the clinic as much, and right. still training at a pretty high level. What does the balance of your day look like now? How does that feel different than when you were waking up at 4 a.m. going for your first run of the day?
I know, you know, I think a lot of our culture too, you know, this hustle culture, really, we've seen memes like this on social media, but it sort of like elevates the athlete who gets up that early and gets the run in. And then it's sort of like this eye roll about the runner who runs at like 9:30 or something, like, and, you know, and like this life of a professional athlete, or not even like in reference to professional or elite athletes, but just you're somehow tougher, right? For running super early and like getting everything in. For me, I mean, like I mentioned, when I had a really just sad death in the family, I had to go all in on recovery, like that I just was not maximizing it. And I think I was maybe able to get away with it in my late 20s and into my early 30s. But sometimes you just like that one thing happens and you realize like, oh, dang, I've just been shortchanging like the things that actually give me the most results from my training. You know, as we know, like, stress plus rest is what equals growth, not like stress constantly does not equal growth. So for me, like, it's really great. Like, my days are structured now where I wanted to get to the point where I don't have to set an alarm clock anymore so that my body can get the sleep that it needs. Again, I don't like have children yet. So I know this also comes from a place of privilege too, but I mean, that was huge for me. And, like, I know you were formerly living here in Colorado. My husband and I live at 8,700 feet now. And I also just knew the physiological toll that was going to take. And I needed to be getting at least eight to 9 hours of sleep every single night. So I'm no longer getting up that early anymore. I sort of get up when my body like feels rested. And yeah, I usually like start my day, like working, like catching up on athletes, like training logs. And I will do that for a couple hours or so. And then I'll usually get my morning like training in. Right now I am building my volume back up from a bit of a rocky fall. So I'm actually implementing quite a bit of cross training. So it's usually like a morning run and then like an afternoon, like bike session, elliptical, and then strength work. And then like in between those two workout sessions, I'm coaching or taking meetings, calls, things like that.
Yeah. I want to go back to just kind of quickly, like the idea that stress, like for some athletes and what we see sometimes at really high levels, like it is stress plus stress plus stress equals growth for a really short amount of time.
Short. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you see those results and you see the faster times or you see the longer, like being able to tackle longer distances. And there's this mindset of like, oh, I just have to keep doing more. And then there is this thing that happens where the house of cards falls, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's the last straw for your body or your entire system that's just like, enough of it.
Yeah.
And it's really humbling to be like, oh, I thought that was the thing I could keep doing. Like, same kind of feeling, but different context for me. That's kind of how having kids was, like having our third kid. Sure. I was like, oh, I was functioning in a way that was not sustainable, but somewhat doable for a really long time. And then my third kid was like, no. Like, you're not doing any of that, you know? So it's different, but I feel like the way you described that felt so similar to athletes who have experienced like long-term eating disorders or disordered eating or overtraining or all of the above, or even like long-term experiences with low energy availability or irregular menstrual cycles where it's like, but I'm performing really well for now.
Yeah.
And there is always going to be something that the body is like, this is not sustainable. We cannot keep doing this. And like, if you're not going to listen to all these little signs we're giving you, we'll just shut the whole thing down. We will just be done.
Totally. I know. I couldn't agree more. And I think it took me, I mean, I'll be totally honest. It took me a good like year to year and a half of working with a sports psychologist who also like very much worked on like the therapy side of things with me as well. But it took a long time for me to acknowledge that like, I could not continue to wear this badge of honor of like, I've never gotten injured. Like, I'm so durable. I'm so resilient because like I did quote, do all the right things, right? Like I never missed a period. And if I did, I wouldn't have kept like training so hard, or I knew that that would have been a warning sign. I was like diligent about eating enough, like those types of things. But it was very humbling to realize that like, sometimes like you can do all those things, quote, right. And, but there's still these underlying like signals, like probably for me, I should have been like sort of not ignorantly running like, and being like, oh, my heart rate's like a bit high today. Oh, and it's again, a bit high today too. And, you know, and then it's like months and months, right. Of like my heart rate just being like just a little bit too high for like what it should be. Like I said, it was a very humbling experience, and something that while it was tough to go through, it made me a better coach. It made me a better athlete. And again, like, I can't underscore this enough. It doesn't matter what your talent level is. It doesn't matter like what your goals are. Like, all of us should be reaching for longevity in the sport and for what truly makes us happy. I think like sometimes there's those, not like would you rather questions, but I just see those sometimes on social media, and 1000% I would choose like over like, you know, the like a breakout performance or just this out of this world PR. I would every single time choose like the ability to just run every day, like at a moderate pace for the rest of my life and never get injured. Or maybe it's not every day, but just longevity in the sport.
I mean, same. I don't know if everybody feels that way, but I I would take that over an injury any day.
Yeah.
I also wanted to speak to the high altitude piece of it.
Sure.
We were just in, and I don't know if this really has anything to do with anything, but it's interesting to me. We were, so we lived in Colorado Springs for 3 years. So at about 6,000 feet, I felt like I never adjusted, even though I grew up at a high altitude. So like for 18 years of my life, lived at a high altitude and then was gone for, I can't do math, like 12 to 15 years. And then we were in Colorado, and like a lot of things were happening. I had kids and was postpartum and all that stuff. So there's like a number of variables here, but I just really felt like, even 3 years in, running felt so labored the whole time. Yeah. And then we got here in Michigan and it was really humid. We moved in the summer and I just felt like I was flying. I'm like, humidity be damned. I feel amazing. This is so great. So that was like an interesting thing that Mary and I talked a lot about, just like what athletes respond to and what they don't.
Yeah.
And just recently we were in Keystone and we've been there many times, but this is the first time we've come from more of a sea level area up to Keystone, which is at 9,000 feet. And even when we lived in Colorado and went to Keystone, I could not sleep. I don't sleep at that altitude. Yeah. So like, what was your adjustment period like? And like, again, I don't know if this is like so random and quite a bit of a tangent, but I'm so curious, like how
it's a great question.
You're like adjusted to that.
Yeah, I do feel like I responded fairly well to coming. And it's so ironic too, because like when we first moved to, we were in Evergreen, Colorado for a bit, and our home there was at 7,500 feet. And we had just moved from just outside Ann Arbor where you're located now. So it's ironic, just the similarity there. But I actually do feel like I've worked closely with an exercise physiologist, as well as like been in the lab, like pretty frequently to test this, but I am a pretty good responder to altitude. Even that was consistent with my blood work, like very quickly when we moved in 2018.
Yeah.
So I did feel like I adjusted quite well to life, like living and training at and above 7,000 feet. I will say though, that bumping up to 8,700 feet where we are now, I have felt, because like altitude is not like a linear progression. It's sort of this like, you get to 7,000 feet, but then anything above 7,000, it's like this huge, like jot up and then like a step, right? And then, it's just, it's not linear how you feel. And I'm feeling like I'm not currently looking at my paces right now. Like everything has to be effort-based. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is wild. Like it's quote only a 1200 foot difference from where I was living just last week, but it definitely feels intense. And so I'm definitely training a lot more by heart rate and like just stricter control over it. I've been doing that for the last, I would say, 6 months or so from an injury prevention perspective too. And just making sure that I'm not adding too much stress, like no more of this too many like zone three out of a five zone model runs that are supposed to be more of like low zone two.
Yeah.
But similar to you, my sleep is definitely something that I have to keep a really close eye on. Even like my menstrual cycle also plays a huge role in that too. I definitely notice that like late luteal phase, like insomnia, it's sort of like clockwork for me every month. I've been like increasing my carbohydrate intake just to try to like combat the fact that I'm at like alpine altitude now. I do feel like though that altitude is something that once you acclimate to it, like, you know, and you mentioned like never really feeling like you did. I think like it's easier though, because it all kind of always feels hard year round. Whereas like, at least for me, humidity is like, you know, it's like you get a reprieve in the summer, or I'm sorry, in the winter, and then you sort of have to reacclimate in the summer. So I think each person's physiology is different in terms of how they respond. That said, I've actually been a fairly good performer in heat. Some of my best, like the national championship you mentioned, that was in 90 degree heat. And I was battling it out with like Camille Heron, right? Like some of the best, you know, so it's odd. I'm always curious about those physiological differences. I just had a really great conversation with a form coach yesterday on another podcast, but we were just talking about how nuanced everything is in the sport of running, and how I think for a long time, there's like these like general principles that we see like hammered home and like shared so much on social media. And I think the reality is it like kind of annoyingly, it just depends, you know?
Yeah, so much. Yeah. And I mean, I will say that by the end of the 3 years and I was running more consistently, I felt somewhat better. I just never felt like I felt like I was pretty stagnant at one level. And again, many a variable in this equation, like so many, not sleeping, nursing, newborn, like all the things. So it was probably not a fair assessment, but as soon as we got here, I was just like, okay, I feel like I can settle in. And I'm still here. I think there were many variables that led to that, but that's neither here nor there. We can talk about it another time. okay, I would love to dig in a little bit to the recent experience that you had with your sponsor, Lululemon, at their Further event. Mm-hmm. So can you give us a brief description of the overall event, and then we'll dig into it a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So Lululemon Further event was a 6-day ultra marathon. And I know like for some listeners, it sounds so random. But actually like in the history and the context of ultra running, the 6-day event has been, I don't even know when the first one was, but it tracks back to like the 1800s. It has been a timed event that's been documented and like kept track of over the years. So like the brand did settle on that largely because they wanted to fully encompass as many potential records and goals along the way. So we did see my teammate Camille Heron go after like all of those sort of, I don't want to say arbitrary, but for the average listener who, you know, who's a runner, probably doesn't realize, right, that there's like a 200K like world record or American record. So it was really selected to be 6 days to fully encompass all of those goals. That said, there was 10 of us women, all from different backgrounds, all from different like paces as well as like shapes, like body sizes and different regions of the world. So for example, I had a teammate from Hong Kong, a teammate from mainland China, a teammate from Australia. And then I think the rest of us were like North American. But yeah, it was a project that was deeply steeped in research. Everything that was created by the brand in conjunction with the Canadian Sport Institute was to see what is possible for a wide range of athletes when the athletes, the female identifying athletes, are given the same resources that men have been given. So for example, like we think back to the Breaking 2 project that was put on solely for Eliud Kipchoge. He had all, you know, all of like the best, like even like 1500 meter, like 800 meter runners and the male runners in the world, like pacing and drafting for him. And obviously like we saw the Alpha Fly come out of that. So it was a similar concept to that. And there was overlap with the folks who put on that event, Breaking 2, with Further as well. Yeah. I said yes to it because I had the opportunity to work with Dr. Trent Stellingworth, who is a leading researcher in exercise physiology, and especially pushing the needle forward for women specific research. Like, as we know, like there's just not a whole lot on it. But yeah, the research component was incredible. We had force plates within like this huge biomechanical tent, going for the duration of 6 days. We had significant nutrition, and sort of like appetite surveys as well, robust blood work before the event, during the event, after the event. Let's see, like physiological and metabolic testing. And The testing and the research did not just begin at Further. It started a year and a half ago and sort of followed us throughout the entire journey. In addition to that, we had product development and shoe development as well. That for me as an athlete was, it will always be probably like the coolest highlight of my entire career. I mean, being able to develop products that I felt like there was a paucity of, and like that something like it just didn't exist. The best example being like topical cooling products, things like ice bandanas, arm sleeves that have specific pockets for ice to hit like at specific pulse points. And yeah, being able to develop those with the product innovation team and to be working directly with like the VP of R&D with Lululemon was, like I said, an experience I will never forget. And even just like the patent process too, of just like, holy cow, like I played a very specific role in this as a physician too, and coming from a background in medical and healthcare. For me, I just kept thinking like, you know, in a warming planet that we're living on, these things go so much further than like, and no pun intended by saying further, but these things are so much more impactful, right? Than just being solely related to the sport of running. Like we can really apply these types of technologies for like life-saving potentially measures in the future.
Yeah. So it was kind of a two-part event. It was wanting to create an environment where some records could be attempted or broken. And maybe three part, creating an environment where athletes of all different backgrounds and abilities and et cetera can come together and compete in a similar space. And then also a big research component that actually has been in the works for 18 months and then probably will extend for maybe another 18 months beyond here, looking at all the data.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just the fact that it was, like you just mentioned, like a multifaceted endeavor, that was really neat to me. Like, I'll be the first person to say that as a professional athlete, I loved the fact that they that Lululemon and the Canadian Sport Institute intentionally wanted a wide range of ability and body sizes, because that's the reality. Like, the reality is not like a ton of 110 pound, like 5'4", like ultra thin humans, right? Like trying to reach the pinnacle of the sport. And that's also not how we increase inclusivity and diversity in the sport either, as well as just like being able to relate, right? I remember like, and it's no shade on Breaking 2. That was an incredible event. I think it unified a lot of us within the sport, but it also, to a certain extent, wasn't relatable, right? Yeah, like I run my strides at that pace, like for 20 to 30 seconds.
I run
seconds
nothing at that pace.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and most of us don't. So, and you know, I felt like there was something identifiable about Further. You know, I could talk about that team aspect for hours. But I was so incredibly fortunate to coach like one of my teammates who was a brand new runner. And I rarely have that opportunity as a coach to see one of my athletes and to be able to coach one of my athletes in person over the course of 6 days and see her or them reach every single one of these like distance milestones along the way. That was just really, really cool for me. And like I said, something very much a highlight of my coaching career.
Yeah. I want to speak more to that piece of like intentionally bringing in athletes of different levels, of different sizes, different body types, because when you speak to the, not only the research piece, but also the product development piece, you're thinking of like, I know I've heard a lot of elite athletes who are sponsored by shoe companies, for example, who are like, oh, part of my contract is going to the so-and-so headquarters and helping them with product development. It's like, you are in the 1% of runners.
Exactly.
And this entire shoe is designed for your performance and your body and your body mechanics. And that does not extend to the majority of runners. And like, again, no shade at all to the elite athletes. Like they need the best product so they can be the best athlete during their time as a professional. I totally get that. But that design like trickles down into the hobby runner who then is wearing a shoe that like is not designed to support their body or their body mechanics.
Yeah. And yes, 100%. And I will say that like one of my favorite humans to work with throughout this process, like getting towards the event of Further, his name is Jordan Carey. He was the head. He is the head of shoe innovation and development with Lululemon. And he was just the most amazing human to work with. He had a really tough task on his hands to develop a shoe that could feasibly work across the spectrum of athletes. And I know I'm not someone who like dives into like those posts or like other podcast conversations or even like YouTube videos that are like criticizing an event. But that said, I have heard a few, like some people have like sent me, like forwarded certain conversations. I think he truly, like the shoe team truly did develop this shoe on a truncated timeline. I'm not the expert on product development, but I do know that like usually it takes like at least like 24 months or 2 years to develop a shoe and bring it to fruition with the brand stamp on it. But I mean, he had to do this, like you said, in 18 months. Like we were constantly being sent like a prototype, and he was just revising it, like flights up to Portland to like get our feet rescanned. Like all this feedback, running on a treadmill, saying like, okay, how does the forefoot feel? How does the heel feel? Like, you know, is this too much cushion? Like, et cetera, things like that. And we did have two shoe options during Further. We had the Beyond Feel, which was released on Lululemon's site, I think the week of Further, earlier in mid-March. And then we also had access to a prototype shoe. And that was public knowledge. I personally preferred the prototype shoe that was geared a little bit more with lower heel to toe drop and a bit more of a responsive foam, which is, I think it's marketed more towards a more efficient runner, right? So that makes sense that some of us preferred that shoe. And it really, you know, it depends on pace too when you're running. So we had access to those two shoes, as well as like a trail option shoe that had already been released by Lululemon. I just think it's a huge testament to Jordan and like the shoe team in general that like, I was able to sort of like step back at the end of the event, and also my background and working on feet and ankles, and just be like, wow, you know what? A huge success of this event was to get 10 women, all different shapes and sizes, weights, abilities, talents, et cetera, to a finish line. Every single one of them of us, like pretty much like hit our goal. Tons of records were broken and everyone was healthy at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, like, of course, like I hesitate to say that like there's something healthy about running for 60 straight. Of course, there's a lot. There's, like we said, there's nuance to that. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, like no one had, everyone's feet like were intact, right? Like there wasn't just these like feet emergencies at all. And I think that was a huge accomplishment of the event. I'm extremely proud to have worked with that team, just because having seen the behind the scenes and just, like I said, the truncated timeline and the fact that each shoe that they made, while it was across the board the same model, it was each like a bespoke shoe fit to each of our feet. Like I know my right foot is like slightly longer than my left. This is like so nerdy, but I tend to get like over the years, I was starting to get like a sort of a perpetual like ingrown toenail, like on my lateral right hallux or my great toe. I never like had to have like it like a bolster or anything like that, but the team like raised like that, like just slightly, it was like 2 millimeters, just raised it a tiny, tiny bit in the toe box region, specifically right where I have that like toenail issue. Yeah. It took away everything. Like I haven't had that since. Like, it's little things like that. So it just totally blew my mind within the shoe development process.
Oh my gosh. That's so wild. Okay. The words that you use to describe your big toe, I've never heard before.
I know. I was like, that went a little bit too like anatomically correct.
Very medical. Yes. Yeah. So then, speaking to the research piece, we are going to have Christine Yu on the podcast in a couple weeks, and I'm rereading Up to Speed, which the whole introduction of that, the title of the introduction is Mind the Gaps, and it's talking about the gaps in research. And this is bringing some of my worlds together too, because working in weight inclusive nutrition, we talk a lot about how like there's BMI cutoffs for studies, which doesn't make any sense, because then we apply these results to the entire BMI spectrum, and thinking about sports and how with like research about female bodied athletes is so severely lacking and has been like pretty intentionally ignored or just overlooked for many decades. I'm sure there's so much going on here, but for you, what are some of the research outcomes that you're really excited about, or like the data that you're really excited to dig into?
I'm really excited for the research team to put together, analyze, and write up. We did a few research protocols. It was maybe 11 months before Further. And it was pretty much testing like the endurance and sort of like fatigue of female ultra runners. And I know for me personally, like I've always sort of felt better as a long race goes on. And by long, I do mean like 100 miles, like
really long. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's wild because like my 100 mile PR, I truthfully had zero low points. Again, probably has a lot to do with nutrition. There's a lot of factors at play, but there was never, I never really hit a point where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like significantly slowing down. I just can't do this anymore. And that fatigue, like resistance is, and durability, those, I think those terms have become quite interchangeable now, but it has just been really interesting to me. And we have that type of research on like a lot of like male cyclists, but we don't have that in female like distance runners, let alone female ultra runners, just because that subset and demographic is quite small, as we all can imagine. But I'm really interested about that. And the fact that perhaps female physiology, there's something different that plays a role in the fact that, of course, we know that as the distances get longer, the gap between male and female performances, like it doesn't necessarily get smaller and smaller, but like it tends to stay like a pretty steady like percentage difference. But because there are so many different variables along the way, sometimes like we, that's when we see women like surpass men in these types of longer ultra distances. Like, like for example, I've raced plenty of 100 milers where I, you know, it's like, oh, awesome. Like I'm at a certain point in the race where, yes, like as long as I remain steady, as long as I keep taking care of myself, like I've secured the female win here. So then my focus like shifts to, okay, like how far can I, like, can I make it onto the men's podium? And that's really cool. Again, there's tons of factors that go into that, including like how competitive the field is and things like that. But it is just a really interesting aspect that I don't think has ever been researched before. Other things too, I just feel like the hormonal impacts. And I think the big struggle with obtaining, publishing, analyzing really high quality research on female athletes, that common denominator that complicates it, right, is the menstrual cycle. And just the fact that like, it's very hard, right, to get a good subset of female athletes who are like all cycling to get, you know, like there's always this asterisk, right? Of okay, well, her estrogen was this, like her progesterone was this. And like, are we truly comparing apples to apples here? But I think that there are ways to sort of dive into the research a little bit more while including like the menstrual cycle and there's those types of hormonal impacts. I'm interested about that because I think we've seen a lot of this hyperfixation on training with your cycle. And that's important. Don't get me wrong. But a part of me too, as a coach and a physician, is like, we can't always line up our races.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like we can't, like that's impossible. And I think I'm excited to see more of a middle ground with that, that's rooted in science and that's rooted in female specific research.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of, I don't know if you listen to the Believe in the Run podcast, The Drop, and like they've commented on the fact that Megan Murray, one of the hosts, did a couple of marathons in the fall and they all happened to be about a month apart. And she was like, every day of the race, I'm like starting my period. Like this is like the huge factor that often is not mentioned in like your race recaps or that you don't see on social media. And I mean, for elite athletes, maybe especially, is like that there is so much impact to where you are in that cycle as to how you're going to feel. And like maybe part of their training is just being able to perform at their highest, you know, best selves on that day, no matter where they are in their cycle. But like, that is way easier said than done.
Totally. I know. Cause I think, I do remember Dina Castor saying that like she wish she had been more outspoken about it at the time, but I mean, this was what, 2008?
Yeah, early 2000s.
Like, mid 2000s. Earlier 2000s. And she was like, you know, I started my period, I think the day of like Athens, I'm pretty sure she had said that. And then, but she's like, but in hindsight, I'm like, so glad I did. And like, I performed really well. And that just goes to show like, you know, I was at like peak performance, right? Like based on where my hormones were at. But then you think about it, like for some athletes who have, or maybe are struggling from like something like endometriosis or like who have like experienced significant like PMDD that maybe doesn't just vanish the second their cycle comes. It's like, that's, it's probably not like they really don't want to be racing on the first day of their cycle. Like they're not feeling those, you know, when your hormones are just like equalizing to the closest to a male athlete. I just don't think it's consistent across the board. I am excited to see more research on that so that we can not just have these like blanket statements anymore and blanket recommendations. I'm sure it'll be difficult for us to reach that point, but I think further was a good starting point to sort of like, I'm hopeful that it'll open up the floodgates of more investment in this type of research.
Totally. Yeah. And there's so many factors to consider there, like how much interest was there in the event itself and how much interest will there be in the results when they're published? Is there any collaboration with a university or like
Yeah, Lululemon did collaborate with the University of British Columbia. As listeners know, like Lululemon is a Canadian-based company with headquarters in Vancouver. And yeah, we did, the brand did have us partner with the Canadian Sport Institute, headed by Dr. Trent Snellingworth and his team, who I think a lot of them are based out of Victoria, and then a lot of them are working out of the University of British Columbia. Another really cool piece too, I would be remiss if I didn't mention about the research component, is that they did have a psychosocial aspect too. I have like another, each of us athletes did like two or three sessions. A couple were in person, two were like virtual. And this was like over the span of a year and a half. I have my like final sort of follow-up appointment or session like in a couple of weeks. I think that aspect is really neat too. Just examining that aspect of the sport, because as we know, like for distance runners, you know, from the 5K all the way up to 100 month 6 days, like we've been saying, that the mental and emotional aspect is oftentimes like more critical, right, than the physical component. Like if your psychological health isn't where it needs to be in order to keep physically pushing, then like however much you physically trained and where your VO2 max is and where your running economy is, like it's not that it doesn't matter, but it kind of doesn't, right, if your brain is not on board with what you're about to take on. So I'm excited about that component too.
Yeah. And I was curious about the collaboration with the university, just thinking, at least based on what I know of the US system, like if you have kind of that structure built into the research, it's likely that that can be seen as a pilot study, which then can be used to fund further research, which is probably part of the goal, right? Like let this be an indication that there is not only interest but investment in this research, and then we can continue to build on that. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right, we're gonna wrap up with a couple of last lap questions.
Okay.
And I'm gonna switch these up for you a little bit because I'm getting kind of bored of the ones we've been asking.
Sure.
No offense, Alexis. They're great questions. So I'll mix in some of the ones we've been using and then I'll add some new ones.
Okay, sweet.
All right. It's the last mile of your 100 miler. What is the song that you need to hear on repeat to get you through it?
Gosh, like I'm someone who actually, I've never raced, I don't think ever, with music, not for like a 100 miler. I like get so amped up though. And maybe it's, this song was on my very first playlist though, for my first ever road marathon. I get almost like emotional hearing, it's like the old school Lady Gaga song, like Edge of Glory. It really, it pumps me up. I would love to hear that. And it's sort of like good vibes for me. It brings me back to like carefree running, like nothing at stake, just pushing myself to the finish line. So.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Love that. Edge of Glory. I was like, there is a lot of lead up here. What's the song going to be? Love Lady Gaga. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Another one of our standard questions. What is the product that should sponsor you on top of the products that are already sponsoring you? Because you're always evangelizing them to your friends.
Interesting. Okay. That is a really good question. Man, I freaking love Olipop. It's so good. I think, you know, like I think a few other runners have like mentioned Olipop recently too. I know that like it went a little bit viral with Karen Dez's podcast, but I'm all on board with it. I love myself a good like orange soda or like the fruit punch flavor. But it also has the amazing probiotics in it. So Olipop.
Solid. All right, we love that. What is your favorite mid-race snack? So we're thinking like the 50 mile aid station, what you're approaching, what do you really hope they have?
That's a very easy question for me to answer. And that answer is tater tots.
Are we going like tater tots with condiments, or are we just going?
I usually just want them like just salty, like not greasy though, like pretty crispy. I know I had a pretty big ask for my crew at one during a 100 miler where I was like, I need them to be crispy, like not like soggy. So I know my friend was like, okay. And she's also like one of my athletes now too, but she had this like incredible, like camping tiny little air fryer, and like it worked perfectly. So yeah, they really came through for that.
That's 10 out of 10. They understood the assignment. Okay. Yep. What is your favorite way to rest?
I'm not a great napper. I wish I was better at it. I don't know. I just like relaxing at home with my dogs, to be honest, like on the couch outside on our deck. Yeah, just watching TV or something. That really is my favorite place to relax.
We love a doggo mention, so
Yep.
yes, love that. Okay, last but not least, what is a moment that you feel really proud of recently? Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I would say, like, full disclosure, I was questioning if it made sense for me to emotionally line up it further. It really wasn't this thing where I was like, should I or should I not? I knew I was going to. But I also knew that it was going to be emotionally hard, just because I am coming back from an injury in the fall, and I promised myself that I would not rush back for any race, any circumstance, any sponsorship, like anyone. I promised myself that I would stay on my own timeline that made the most sense for me. And yeah, I think all of us have been in that place, right? Where if we've either been injured or sick and we've had to pull out of something, or like we just don't want to be in that type of race environment. Like we just kind of want to be at home and not be following along. So I found myself, a part of me didn't want to have to put myself in that position for 6 days straight, like total transparency. But I'm really proud of the fact that I worked through that and I was able to really put the needs and goals of others. I'm not saying that we should always do that. You should always like prioritize yourself and your peace. That's of course important, but I did enough work with my therapist to be able to get to a point where like I could go all in because of my teammates and not necessarily because of my own performance goals. So I'm really proud of that because I think that's taken a lot of work and maturity to get to that point. That's not to say that I didn't feel frustrated at certain points that but yeah, I think that's something I'm really proud of. And I encourage others who are maybe going through that to not remove yourself totally from the running community or meeting up with friends, and just understanding that your worth as an athlete does not hinge on your ability to perform like at the highest level. Your worth can be being a part of the sport, not no matter what, but in a way that brings you joy and health and just long-term appreciation for what your body can do, even when it maybe can't do it in the moment. So yeah, that's something I'm proud of.
Okay. On that note, where are some places that folks can find you if they're interested
Sure.
in connecting?
Yeah, I'm fairly active on Instagram. It's just my handle is at Stephanie Ann Flippin. I have kind of a funky spelled name, so I'm sure Heather will throw that into the show notes. But
The show notes for sure. Yeah.
yeah, there or my website is just stephanieflippin.com. I'm also really responsive there with inquiries and just messages in general. It doesn't have to be like, hey, I'd love to work with you. It could just be, I've received like thank you notes there too, and I'm always so appreciative of that.
That's so fun. Okay. Do you want to plug your podcast and your
Oh,
upcoming
yes.
live event?
Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up. I also co-host a podcast called the Making Strides podcast with my co-host Carolyn Sue. She's the founder of Diverse We Run on Instagram. We created that podcast just to bring our perspectives, Carolyn being an amateur athlete in the sport, me like with my more like professional aspect of things. And just we cover the intersection of race, diversity, culture with running and how we can continue to make the sport the best that it can be. We started that early last year in 2023. We hosted our first live event at the Boston Marathon last year, and we are returning this year. A bigger event. We'll be interviewing two of our wonderful comrades, Charlie Dark and Kayla Jeter. And yeah, all the details I will give to Heather for our Eventbrite registration. It's a free event. I will also be leading Lululemon Shakeout event or Shakeout Run prior to the Boston Marathon on Sunday. So looking forward to seeing you guys there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Steph. It was good to
Thank
see
you.
you.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening to this episode with Stephanie Flippin. We have all the links mentioned in the show notes, and you can find our show notes from all of these episodes on lane9project.org. Subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter at lane9project.substack.com and follow us on Instagram at lane9project. If you have any questions or want to get in touch, our email is pretty easy to figure out. It's just lane9project@gmail.com. All of those links are in the show notes as well. And hey, if you're listening and you happen to enjoy these conversations and they're helpful to you in any way, shape, or form, and you're thinking, I know somebody that would enjoy these as well, pass it along to a friend. That's so helpful for us in growing the show and reaching more listeners. You could also leave a rating or review, especially if you listen on Apple Podcasts. That's all for now. We'll catch you next time.